sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back, News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you with us on this Tuesday as we roll through. Tomorrow we'll be in Columbus, Ohio for the Nittany Lions and Ohio State. Penn State and Ohio State each looking for their second consecutive wins respectively. Also tomorrow, a look back at today's Super Bowl Media Day. I was a part of that this morning at the Prudential Center in Newark, the home of the Devils. They had a chance to sit down with Michael Robinson and Jordan Hill, who will be playing in their first Super Bowls respectively. And we'll talk to the two former Nittany Lions and hear from them tomorrow on the show, as well as updating you on Nittany Lion basketball and everything else going on in sports, and plus other tidbits from Super Bowl Media Day as well. We'll have that for you on tomorrow's show. Next hour, Corey Geiger, Altoona Mirror. This half hour, Mike Poorman, statecollege.com. Our thanks to all the Penn State assistant coaches who talked with us on Friday, and we had that in the previous half hour, and Tony DeFazio, the Pittsburgh sports reporter, was on with us in the initial half hour. You can hear all that on our podcast here on WKOK. Today's show being brought to you by Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills, and Northumberland. If service and price means something to you, it means everything to them. Auto, home, life, business insurance. Kratzer Insurance has served the Valley for more than 50 years. Find out why. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We now bring in Mike Poorman from statecollege.com. Mike, great to have you with us. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. This has been certainly an interesting ride, and I know I've told a couple of people, I said, when I do the pregame show with James Franklin before Central Florida, that'll be the fourth football coach I've done a pregame show with in 30 games.
That's some kind of record. You might you might make the next edition of the NCAA record book.
Oh, I don't know about that, but I mean, but that, I think, doesn't that put in perspective how things have gone?
Oh, when you throw in Larry Johnson for his 10 days as interim, that's five head coaches in 27 months, and then one head coach in 46 years. It's kind of an interesting juxtaposition, to say the least, huh?
There's no question about that. But now, this came together quickly, though. They knew they had a time frame to work with. What were your thoughts on how they went through the process, seemingly stuck to the process, and then came out with really the guy I know they wanted?
Well, I think they went into it very quickly with, you know, picking the search team within a day. And they had five people, at least their top five, that they were going to go after. And they really did. They went fast. That's for sure. And especially in comparison to the 40 days prior that resulted in O'Brien. But you know, in retrospect, those were 40 days well spent when they went into the desert, fasted 40 days, and came out with O'Brien. So you know, that was I think that was a selection of biblical proportions.
Well, what about the assembly, the assemblage of the staff? You've done a good job of really keeping up on that part of it. Eventually, I think it's tomorrow. They're going to release all the names. But still, when you look at how it's come together, you did a good job of keeping up on that part of it.
Well, you know, I appreciate you saying that, Steve. In retrospect, it was kind of a simple job. You just had to take away the two or three guys that remained in Nashville. And I think, you know, with Hand, he was in play as far as at least a candidate that Mason got the job. And I think he was an excellent hire. But everything I've heard about Hand and reading about him as well, talking to people down there, he was Penn State's kind of lucky that he didn't get that job, because he's the last guy that Franklin brought up was one of the best guys that Franklin brought up.
Yeah, Herb Hand you're talking about. And you're right. Yeah, he was the interview for that job down there, and justifiably so. And it's Penn State's benefit that he'll be here. The fact that James Franklin is surrounded by people, and when I had him on the show, I asked him about this. I said, look, you're extremely organized. You can't do what he does and the number of things that he does unless he's extremely organized. But you also have to surround yourself with people who understand your organization. The plus that Penn State has going forward, that they have people already on the same page with how the head coach thinks.
No, and I think that's how Franklin likes it. I mean, obviously, I mean he brought the whole, almost the whole kit and half of the caboodle along. I think the real value of that for Penn State is that they hit the ground running. I mean, even before everything was official, they hit the ground running as far as putting the pieces together and coordinating their plan for recruiting for 2014, but also as they've hit the trail, hitting some of the 2015 guys. So I think they're, you know, wheels to the ground, and I kind of like Herb Hand's little little vine piece. He showed the wheels literally hitting the ground at University Park Airport, which I thought that was not only clever, he's a big social media guy, but kind of apropos. So I think that was the biggest value, perhaps, on the short term of bringing everyone along.
What's your sense of this? I know with Bill O'Brien, I think he did some things differently and also some things the same. I think there was always excitement about anything different only because, in part, because it was different. What about with James Franklin? What's the sense you get from people that you talk to, fans that you talk to, about this hire moving forward? And does it, in your opinion, really help the entire university move forward?
Well, I think his approach is very different than Bill. Bill was a man of fewer words and big action, and we really haven't been able to see what he's done on the practice field. I think, you know, there's a sense of what's happening in recruiting, but you know, that's a way off. I mean, he certainly has the enthusiasm for the job. The you know, the key is once we start seeing how they look
sure.
in practice and once they hit the field.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question about that. I mean, in the end, you're going to be judged by how many games you win and lose, and so, you know, we know that along the way.
Now, it is an interesting juxtaposition as far as this, how Bill put together his staff, and even Joe did, is a much more veteran staff. You know, Bill had total five people who had been head coaches, four people who won some sort of national championship. If you throw in the Super Bowl, even though he didn't win, that's five people, you know, people who had mostly major college experience, whereas, you know, Franklin's staff is a much younger staff, a staff that doesn't have a lot of major college. I mean, cumulatively, the staff that he's put together has less than 80 total years coaching in major college football. So there's a different orientation there. I think this is more of a young unit that knows each other, whereas, you know, Bill brought in seasoned professionals at all type of different levels. So it certainly is a different approach.
Yeah, no, the average age, Joe's last staff was 59. Average age of Bill's staff was 50. This one's 39. So when you look at that across the board, that certainly is something that you know, to be considered. There's also, as I've mentioned with others, there's going to be a learning curve here. And the learning curve for them is not as a staff of coaches, but there's a steep learning curve in terms of learning opponents. If I were to rack up a DVD right now of Missouri, Georgia, South Carolina, that coaching staff could break it down for me in 5 minutes of what this guy does, that guy does, that guy does, because they play them all the time. There's only one opponent in this group that's coming up. They play, that's UMass.
That's probably one of the lesser
right,
challenges
exactly.
they face. I think, you know, perhaps the biggest challenge that they may face, I mean, the coaches all know each other, and they're bringing in chief of staff and the administrative people. But listen, you know, you look at a guy like Adrian Amos, and he's going to have, assuming Shoup does some with the secondary, which has been him and his MO in the past, not knowing how much Terry Smith's going to do where. But, you know, Adrian's had at least five different people coaching him directly in his, you know, come spring. That's an immense amount. So that's five times or four times he's had to start over by, you know, proving himself and showing, you know, this is how I do things. I mean, even the offense, a guy like Miles Diffenbach is going to be on his learning his third offense. Mm-hmm. In 4 or 5 years at Penn State. I mean, that's astounding.
Yeah, it is, because that's not how things went, as we know, for a long time. That's a completely different ballgame. Everyone's talking about what numbers they have in terms of recruiting and so forth. The bottom line is they can have 75 scholarship guys when they start. By getting scholarships back, it gives you the sense that there's some turning of the corner. But that's a start of the turn of the corner. How much of a mystery, not just with the coaching staff, but just by the numbers and the depth, how much of a mystery is the 2014 season?
Mystery is a great word, Steve. And I think it is a mystery. There's just so many variables that you really can't sit down and sift them all out. And going back to, the individual coaching and then the cohesion of learning a new system on offense and defense and then learning that, and taking that to Ireland. And then, so I think there's just so many moving parts. There's going to be a learning curve. The question is how long is that going to take? Because you're going to see a different defense. You're going to see a different offense.
Yeah, but you know what? They are inheriting resilient players. There isn't a lot they haven't seen. So they're inheriting that part.
Well, that's a great point. And you know these kids. You know them personally.
Sure.
It's an amazingly resilient bunch. I mean, and it's made them a resilient but cohesive at their level from person to person. Nothing against any set of coaches at this point. But, these guys are bonded together, and when the coaching search was going on, they were communicating with each other on their own informal level. And I think, those type of things have evolved to a higher degree than they really almost anywhere else any other time.
Yeah. It's interesting. Adam Rittenberg wrote an article today on ESPN.com saying the Big Ten did not have a lot of early entries into the draft, but the problem the Big Ten has is that there were significant early entries, specifically mentioning Bradley Roby, Allen Robinson, and so forth. What do you think the state of the conference is after watching the bowl season and going through the full season?
Just talk about Penn State's division. I'll go across the board. It's strong and getting stronger. It's a different type of coach. I think with D'Antonio has maybe not reinvented himself, but reinvented Michigan State to a certain degree. It's getting better. And here's another way it's going to get better is with the new TV contract. I mean, it's going to give more money for facilities across the board for facilities, for staff, for someone like, Indiana. You're not going to lose your coordinator to the ACC. I mean, that's, if I'm the conference, I look at that and go, how can that happen? But certainly with Indiana, you go, how can that happen? And one, it's a commitment to the program, but two, it's the financial wherewithal to pay those salaries so people don't leave, and so you can also upgrade the program.
And then new TV contracts on the horizon in, 2 years? And then they're talking a projection. It's only a projection. But if the market stays the way it is, they're talking about $40 to $45 million per school, as opposed to the 26 they get now.
Yeah, I mean, that's incredible, and really, you'll see negotiations start, by this fall, and they'll try to wrap it up early rather than going to the very edge. And the other thing you're going to see out of that is the Big Ten Network is going to get a few more conference games. I mean, they're owned half by Fox. So they also, you might see some things with Fox Sports 1. But they're going to retain a few more games and make their own network more valuable, get more money from ABC, ESPN for fewer games. So it strengthens the conference by strengthening its network.
Yeah, eventually they're going to go to 9 conference games. And when they go to 9, that'll be the 2016 season. It cuts back on non-conference games, and especially that fourth weekend, which ends up being for most schools a waste. And so it ratchets up competition. But the other part, too, is that 9th conference game gives the Big Ten Network more inventory, and that's where the SEC, I think, is going to find that they need to go to 9 as well.
Well, that's a great point. And with that extra inventory, it's better inventory, intra-conference, which, you're going to make the product more valuable, more interesting in the D.C. and New York markets. I mean, the Big Ten Conference is not in those markets because there's a preponderance of Rutgers and Maryland fans, they're in those areas because there's a higher percentage of college football and Big Ten fans, and this is going to give them more of a better product when they buy that cable channel, Big Ten Network.
Yeah, and the next part of this, too, is the Big Ten is hinting at desire to get more games marketed in New York, Brooklyn, whatever, you know, wherever they can get it. By doing that, the brand, especially doing it before the TV contract is done, how much can that help them in negotiations?
Well, you hit the word, the nail on the head, you know, with the brand, enhances the brand, but also in some ways still it's the it's the epicenter media, so you will get much more of the quote unquote local New York media, but it's also where you're still looking at network headquarters there across the board. So I think it's going to be, you know, the old-fashioned way, and back, you know, Penn State, that's why they would play in the Meadowlands, is to track that market. I think it's still that way, just on a broader scale.
Yeah, just on a broader scale is right. Basketball is going to be, is certainly the other important component in this, because those will be the two that they'll attempt to sell. There's no doubt, I don't know what Maryland and Rutgers will bring football-wise. Maryland looks a little better. Rutgers played better last season. But there's no question Maryland's going to add to the depth of this conference basketball-wise.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it greatly, you know, improves, again, the product. And it is kind of interesting. And Franklin used the word a couple times, too. And I'm using it, so I'm just as guilty. You know, we're talking about a product, and it's still supposed to be a college game. So we certainly morphed beyond that, which is...
Well,
it's troublesome to me when I call it a product.
Well, you know, I mean, let's be honest about it. I mean, and I think as time goes, you have to make sure that we're not naive about what this is. Because the way it is, the direction of college football and college basketball is quite simple. Why do you play college football games at noon, 3:30, 4:30, 6, 7:30, or 8? Why do you play college basketball, you know, in the Big Ten on Saturday, Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, because it is a television show? That's what it is. It's now a television show. Why is Penn State playing at 8 o'clock on a Thursday night? Television show.
No, I mean, that is true, and hence it becomes a product. But I think I kind of reconcile that a little bit in that scholarships these days, if you're here for 5 years at Penn State, you know, they're worth upwards to $250,000. So, the players of those sports are getting something of true value for their work and for their efforts. But I see once you're getting $40-45 million from the Big Ten, I think a stipend of $250 a month across the board for everybody would not be a bad thing, just to acknowledge that there are additional expenses because of that additional time spent.
Yeah, well, that's something that we'll debate a little bit later, but all I know is that there is a luxury in life to walking out of college with no debt.
You sound like a parent, Steve.
I sound like one that's had five in college, okay? There is a luxury to life to having to walk out of a college with no debt, right? And maybe the perspective of a parent who pays is not a bad one to hear.
No, I think it's terrific. I think it's a wonderful thing, and I think most kids are very appreciative of the scholarship, you know, of the scholarship value too. A little spending money, I don't think, would hurt either.
Right. Well, I know they're appreciative of it, especially after they go through the first, you know, after they go through the first couple of training camps and sit there and go, "Boy, I'm going to need my degree." You'd be amazed how that revelation suddenly after that second training camp, like, you know, remember that dream I had? I'm going to be the best college football player or basketball player I can, but I know darn well that my degree is going to be really important to me when this is done. Mike, thanks so much. Appreciate the time. As always, very enjoyable.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Take care.
Mike Poorman, StateCollege.com. Next half hour, Corey Geiger. We'll talk with him, get his perspective on everything that's going on here and across the board. Corey Geiger, next half hour. Today's show being brought to you by Kratzer Insurance. Mount Pleasant Mills and Northumberland. If service and price means something to you, means everything to them.
auto, home, life, business insurance. Find out why Kratzer Insurance has been serving the Valley for more than 50 years. From the Sunbury Motors Studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We head to the bottom of the hour in news, then Corey Geiger next half hour, right here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915. Sunbury Motor Company has over 300 new Fords and over 100 new Hyundais that must be sold now. Get savings up to $11,000 during the January inventory liquidation event at Sunbury Motor Company. Liquidation means vehicles need to fly off the lot as quickly as possible, and Sunbury Motors will do what it takes to earn your business now. See all of the great deals on new Fords and Hyundais now, because time is of the essence, and if you wait too long, the new Ford or Hyundai you've had your eyes on will be in someone else's driveway. At Sunbury Motor Company, they never pressure you into buying a vehicle you don't want or that's out of your price range. They want to make sure you're getting the best possible deal with the best possible service before, during, and after the sale. This is the time to buy that new Ford or Hyundai, and this is the place. Stop at Sunbury Motor Company now while the selection's at its best. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at SunburyMotors.com.
Who has all the time for shopping around company to company for insurance? And do you really understand what you're getting? Price is nice, but peace of mind is best protection for your dollar, and that's priceless. For 50 years, people of the Susquehanna Valley have trusted the Kratzer Insurance Agency to do all the work when it comes to insurance. As an independent insurance agent with resources of many companies, they can find the policy that is right for you without giving up local, reassuring service that is lost by online or long-distance companies. Whether it's auto, homeowners, life, or business, think Kratzer Insurance in Mount Pleasant Mills and Northumberland.
Hi, this is Kim Ebright. Right now, Allied Insurance is lowering rates for preferred auto classes. Call us, stop in, or visit us online at KratzerInsurance.com. You may qualify.
Standing together against whatever. Family, friendship, security.
The Kratzer Insurance Agency.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us on this Tuesday. Corey Geiger in just a few moments. Trying to get through to Corey and get him on the show here. Just a couple minutes here. But it also gives us time to tell you about the fact that we're being brought to you by our good friends at Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills and Northumberland. Auto, home, life, business insurance, they have basics. The basics are they think that service and price mean a lot to you. It means a lot to them. So check them out. They've served the Valley for more than 50 years. Find out why. Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills, and Northumberland. I'm in the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, Routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Decades and decades of a reputation that is rock solid and built on service, dependability, and your needs. That is Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key, Routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And I believe now we have an opportunity to connect in with Corey Geiger from the Altoona Mirror. Hi, Corey.
Hey, guys. I apologize for the delay. I had to get the channel on Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood so that the kids would have something that they could do during this little bit of time. So, sorry about that.
That's why cable created Sprout, man. It's Sprout's really good.
You never know about PBS programming until you have kids. And I'm not going to say that it's good programming, but some of it's a little better than others.
Sure, of course it is, like anything else. Well, let's roll into it here. Football, obviously. The outdoor Super Bowl is getting, as expected, a lot of play, and it turns out that we have built a fire here in the studio, so we feel a lot better about how cold it is. What are your thoughts on how the publicity for it's playing out for the NFL?
I don't like the thought of an outdoor Super Bowl. I mean, I want to see these teams, you know, play to their best levels, and you're generally going to get that in, you know, better conditions. I want to see Peyton Manning at his best go up against that Seahawks defense at its best. I'm not sure that we're going to get that if it's really cold, if it's windy. I think I've watched a lot of the Broncos. I really like the AFC. He doesn't throw a good ball, Steve. It flutters. It floats all over the place. He's very susceptible for poor throws in the wind, as all quarterbacks are. I'd like to see him, you know, be able to attack that defense in, you know, good conditions. And if it's bad, it's not just for the game. If it's bad, I think it's going to be, you know, a real big PR hit for the NFL as well. I just think it's something that I know they did it for money and they did it for corporate sponsors and all those things, but I think there are too many negative factors.
That's funny, though, because I talked to Tony Knopp, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management, and some of the corporate partners he deals with have pulled out this year because it's an outdoor Super Bowl, and doubling down on next year when it goes to Glendale, which I thought was a very interesting comment from a guy in the know. I mean, I don't know if it's played out the way the NFL thought it would.
I think that guy that you have on, Tony, I've heard him a number of times. I heard that yesterday. That is an outstanding guest. We talk about a lot of different things in sports, games, and all those types of things. I commend you for finding that guy and having him on so frequently, because I'm pretty intrigued by a lot of the things that he says about the inner workings of the way sporting events take place. And Colin Cowherd talks about this all the time. Fans don't matter anymore at sporting events. They really don't, because the money nowadays comes so much from TV. It's not about whether you put fans in the stands or not, because these franchises are going to be able to spend their money based on what they're getting from TV revenue. So, like I said, I've heard Tony on with you a number of times. I think he brings a lot of good perspective.
And that brings up another point, and this is, I think that they have to do a better job across the board. The only one I would say is the NHL that really can't. But I don't care whether it's college football, basketball, NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball. If you're getting this kind of revenue from television, make it easier for the fan to buy a ticket. Get them there.
You know, Steve,
make it easier.
I've grown up with baseball my whole life. I love to go to a baseball game.
So do I.
But I will be perfectly honest with you, and I don't know how you've – I mean, we're working these games, so it's different for us too.
Sure.
To be perfectly honest with you, I would much rather sit in my living room and watch virtually any game than go to any game. And now, baseball would be a little bit of an exception on a beautiful summer day because you can get out. I don't want to go to an NFL game. I want no part of going to an NFL game as a fan with all the drunken idiots that are there. The NBA is not really my cup of tea. I do go to a lot of college basketball games as a fan, but I'd rather sit and watch it from my living room. The TV experience is so good.
Yeah.
So many replays. You know, so much more information at your fingertips. I don't want to go really to any game as a fan when I can watch it on TV.
And see, that's why I think they get so much revenue from television. If I were them, I'd do everything I could to make it very easy for people to go. Whatever I could do to make it easier. And I'm not going to sit here and say I know that the economics are and so forth, but I can read. And when I read and say, you know, they're getting rights fees for this, rights fees for that. Let's take the NFL, for example. They're going to farm out Thursday Night Football, at least 8 games of it. Now, you and I both know they're going to get a lot of major bids for that, which is going to up the ante for every team. Now, why on God's green earth do you need to tell a fan that they've got to spend $200 plus parking and everything else to go to a game? Why don't you look at them and say, look, every ticket's $40. Have a good time.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. I think if they're going to make their money on the TV, then make it cheaper for us to go. And again, I'm real curious to see what's going to happen with the Pirates over the next couple of years, because basically you can go over to Pittsburgh and watch a Pirates game and get a really good seat on the lower level, maybe you're 20, 30 rows up, for $19
right.
a piece. I mean, that is appealing to me.
Yep.
Let me throw one other thing out, Stephen. My colleague Neil Riddell brought this up a couple of years ago. I think this is a really good point about Penn State football. I'm not sure that it would fly. I'm not sure, you know, that anybody's ever thought about it. The $40 game day parking, to me, would discourage the fan who wakes up on a Saturday, doesn't have the season ticket, but thinks, hey, I might like to go to a football game today. I'll go to a Penn State game. I can still probably get a relatively cheap ticket. But when you're looking at paying $40 for parking on top of it, I don't know why that price has got to be so much. I would think, you know, you can go virtually to any game and you can find $15, $20 parking somewhere. I just wonder if that's something that Penn State has ever considered, especially if you're talking about a lot of empty seats for some of these games. Lower the game day parking. Maybe that could have an impact.
Well, and that's an interesting point because, say, you and I, Corey, plan to go to a game. Then right. We can go online and we can get parking for 10. But if you call me and say, hey, Steve, what do you say we go today? What the heck? You know, and we're both in the mood to go up and take in a game. All of a sudden it's $40. That does become a discouraging thing.
Yeah. And look, when you go to pretty much any game, I'm okay parking relatively close for $20.
Sure.
But if I got to spend $40, I'd rather walk a mile and a half. I'm just not going
to
do it.
Right. Well, no, when I go to Fenway Park, now, of course, Fenway's a little different. They really don't have parking, but the closer you get, the easier it is. I'll park at the Prudential Center for $15 and walk the five blocks. I don't care. I do that almost every time now, and that's how I go about it because it's specific. If you show your ticket, that's what you pay when you leave. And that, to me, it's the easiest way to do it, and I could care less about how far I got to walk.
Well, I've heard you bring up this topic before. I've actually done shows on this. Would fans rather attend the game or go, you know, or watch it in person? I have a lot of friends who just love sports. One of my good friends, Scott Franco, works with the Altoona Mirror.
Sure.
Will watch any football game anywhere. If the toilet bowl is on, he will watch a football game. It doesn't matter who's playing. But he's not going to go to games, you know, because they're so expensive. He's got a family. He would just rather watch them on TV. And I know so many people like that, be it finances or just be at the comforts of home.
And the comforts of home for this particular Super Bowl are going to be incredible for most of the country. They're going to love it when it comes to the Super Bowl. The James Franklin start. How do you feel about the James Franklin start and some of the buzz he's been able to generate, at least so far? And it's only a start.
Well, you want to talk about energy. He's bringing energy. There's no doubt about it. Derek LaVarce from the Wilkes-Barre paper, I think you probably had him on the show,
yep.
Good Penn State beat writer.
Sure is.
Brought up a good point on Twitter the other day. He mentioned the average age of the coaching staffs. And I think, you know, I might be off by 1 or 2 years on this, but the average age on Joe's last coaching staff was 59.
Right.
The average age on O'Brien's coaching staff was 50. And the average age on Franklin's coaching staff is 39.
Right.
So with that, you're going to lose some experience. You're going to lose, I mean, when you look at that coaching staff, Bill O'Brien assembled, Steve, we talked about it while he was here. We can talk about it now. You're talking about just terrific experience at a lot of different levels, NFL coaches, major college coaches.
Right.
James Franklin, his guys don't necessarily have that kind of experience. They've coached mostly at the middle levels or some lower major levels. But they're going to be young and hungry and enthusiastic. Typically, the younger you are, usually you'll work a little bit harder. And I would think that the staff he's put together coming from Vanderbilt, most of the guys from Vanderbilt, they're going to come here with a lot of enthusiasm. This is their first, you know, crack at the really, really big time. You know, not to disparage Vanderbilt, but, you know, this is an opportunity for them to all really make a huge impact at the major college level at Penn State and in the Big Ten. So I think that the job he's done putting the staff together, while it might not be some of the biggest names or some of the biggest resumes that, you know, O'Brien might have had, I like the group that he's assembled.
Well, and there's another part, too, because when I had him on the show, I asked him about, you know, the fact that he is personally very organized. You can't do the number of things that he does unless he's extremely organized. And you have to have people in your organization that understand your organization. That's a big step forward by having seven guys on his staff that he already knows exactly, that they know how he works and why he works.
Sure. You want to be around people of like mind and of similar, you know, philosophies, those kinds of things. And, you know, I'm sure that he knows exactly what his assistants are capable of, and they know what he's capable of, having spent time together. And that's just the way the coaching profession works. Whenever guys get that opportunity, they're typically going to turn to the people that they know and know well, and he certainly has done that. Now, again, it is going to be a little bit of a bigger and different kind of challenge for that coaching staff at Penn State than maybe some of the places they were. Now, they were doing a good job at Vanderbilt and recruiting against the country's best teams in the SEC and still able to land some kids. So it's not like they haven't gone up against the really big boys in the past. But they did it at a place where there really maybe weren't a lot of expectations, and you could kind of sneak up on people to a degree. Well, you're not really going to do that at Penn State. The expectation level here is very, very high, and you're going to be going up against Urban Meyer and Brady Hoke and Notre Dame for some of these kids. So to be able to sell them on Penn State, it's going to take kind of that enthusiasm and, mm-hmm. and excitement and energy that James Franklin and his staff really seem to show.
But there's something else that it does come into play, and that is it's familiarity. And this is something where it's not talked about that often, but you're taking an entire staff where if I were to sit down and throw a DVD in there of, pick one, Georgia or Missouri, even before I put the DVD in, his members of his staff could sit down and say, you know what, the left tackle does this, the right guard does that, the wideout does that, the middle linebacker does that. Outside of UMass, they're going to have to learn 11 new opponents beginning this year. That is a curve that is not as easy as fans realize it is.
Yeah, there's no question. This year, I've been thinking about this a lot, Steve. This year is going to be really, really fascinating to watch as everybody kind of gets their feet wet. There is talent on the team coming back, and obviously they've got Hackenberg, but they lost a lot of players too. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the new coaches and the new vernacular and all of those types of things. You know, I'm not sure that it was much better than a 7-5 team coming back, even with O'Brien.
Right.
We'll start to study some of this in a few months, but if they can go 7-5, that's probably a success. And I'm sure Franklin will be looking for 8-4. Or better,
right?
But the team itself, no matter who's coaching them, the team itself has question marks on defense. You're replacing maybe the best receiver in program history in Allen Robinson. That's, you don't just do that easily. And say Geno Lewis is a good player, but as of last year anyway, he wasn't Allen Robinson. So there are some question marks that I think will be fascinating to watch and see how Franklin and his staff handle those.
But there's another part, too, I think, that adds on to what you just discussed, and that is, by my numbers, there's, I think, 49 or 50. I think it's 49 recruited scholarship players or scholarship players on the team, and then Stanko makes 50 because he still counts. And then you're going to have 25 guys in all likelihood to get you to 75. Those are pretty thin numbers to deal with, even in a spring practice where, what you're talking about record-wise is very understandable when you really take a look at the depth numbers on the football team.
And, that's why, really, when you take a look back, beating Wisconsin at Wisconsin.
Amazing.
Was a tremendous accomplishment. Michigan turned out to be not as good as people thought, but sure, with what they were able to do last year, to have a winning season. And it may even get tougher this year. So, but here's what I do expect. The Central Florida game should be a much more winnable game now without Bortles and Storm Johnson.
Sure.
I do expect the team, say they go 6-6, and some fans, might look at it and say, well, that's kind of disappointing. I think there will be a grace period for James Franklin, the first year anyway. But I will say this, by 2015, mm-hmm. when you start to have some things coming back and you'll be back second year of the scholarships returning, I think 2015 could really be the resurgent year for the program, be it maybe 9 wins mm-hmm. or maybe even more depending on how things go and go into a bowl game. So, but I think regardless whether they win now 5-7, people might not look too kindly on that, but 5, 6, 7 wins, I think Coach Franklin's probably going to get somewhat of a free pass this first year as everybody kind of gets acclimated and knowing what the holes on the team already are.
Corey, always a pleasure. Appreciate the time very much.
Hey, thank you, guys. Have a good day.
Corey Geiger, Altoona Mirror, joining us on the show today. I think we knocked it around pretty well today with Tony DeFazio, the Pittsburgh Sports Report, talking about Mike Munchak joining the Steelers. We heard from Mike Poorman, got his perspective on all the coaches from statecollege.com. We just heard Corey Geiger and a variety of subjects. And we heard from the other assistant coaches. Friday, of course, we heard from head coach James Franklin and the three coordinators, John Donovan on offense, Bob Shoup on defense, and Charles Huff on with special teams. Well, we heard from the other assistant coaches today, which you can check out on our podcast. You were able to hear from the linebackers coach, Brent Pry, Herb Hand, the offensive line coach, Josh Gattis, the wide receiver coach, Ricky Ronnie, the quarterback and coach and passing coordinator, Terry Smith at corners, who's also the defensive recruiting coordinator, Sean Spencer, the defensive line coach, and Dwight Galt, strength and conditioning coach. We heard from all of them during the second half hour, and you can check all that out on our podcast here on WKOK as well, and go back and check that on stevejonesshow.com. All right, coming up tomorrow, we'll take the show on the road. We'll go to Columbus, where the Nittany Lion basketball team will be getting ready to take on Ohio State. That Modest team just broke a four-game losing streak themselves by beating Illinois on Thursday night. Well, the Nittany Lions Thursday night beat Nebraska. They'll go head-to-head at 7 o'clock tomorrow night in Columbus. We'll do the show from Columbus tomorrow. And we'll also have on the show tomorrow Michael Robinson of the Seattle Seahawks and Jordan Hill of the Seattle Seahawks to talk about the Super Bowl. Super Bowl Media Day taking place today. I had an opportunity to talk with both of them today. And we will hear from them tomorrow, as well as other little tidbits from Super Bowl Media Day as well. Today's show being brought to you by Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills, and Northumberland Auto, Home, Life, Business Insurance. If service and price mean something to you, it is Kratzer Insurance. Mount Pleasant Mills and Northumberland have served the Valley for more than 50 years. And, of course, we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Roots 11 at 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Again, our thanks to Corey Geiger from the Altoona Mirror, Mike Poorman, statecollege.com, Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report, and also for the time the assistant coaches gave us as well. Tomorrow, a look at Penn State, Ohio State basketball, but also coming up tomorrow, a look at the Super Bowl. Two former Nittany Lions in the game, Michael Robinson and Jordan Hill of the Seattle Seahawks. They will join us on the show tomorrow. We are looking forward to that. No Penn Staters on the Broncos. They're out. They do have that guy Manning. You may want to hear from him as well. We may sprinkle that in too. Thanks for joining us today, right here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.